Hello and welcome to this 150th episode of Viewpoints on today's show. To help Canadians shop locally, a Montreal student launches the Buy Beaver app.
So you just scan a product, the barcode of the product. If the product is in our database, it will open up a score for it and tell you if it's Canadian or not.
Another one in Ontario does kind of the same and launches a browser extension that helps online shoppers buy Canadian, eh?
So what this extension does is it gives you a subtle nudge saying, hey, just a reminder, Nike.com is not owned by a Canadian company. So why don't you check out some of these Canadian alternatives? And it shows you a list with their websites and their logos in the top right for some alternatives like Lululemon or Arc'teryx.
Municipalities are also pitching in. We go to Kingston, Ontario to find out what they're doing to support Canada and buying local.
We've all heard the comments about Canada becoming the 51st state and how President Trump thinks that Canada is not viable as a country. And I think we need to be crystal clear here that Canada will never be the 51st state.
Then to the Nova Scotia Library and its banned books sanctuary.
Every individual has a right to decide what to read. And when you're a parent, I'm a parent myself. And as a parent, I get to decide what my family reads, but I don't have the right to decide that for my neighbors.
And rapid housing projects are on the move in Toronto. Welcome to Viewpoints, local news nationwide.
You are on the air with Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Hello, thanks for being with us again this week. My name is Boris Hassan. I'll be with you for the next half hour. As the U.S. Threatens steep tariffs on Canadian products, Montrealers and many Canadians are looking to buy local. In an era of globalized supply chains, it's tough to know what products are Canadian and where your dollars may be going. That's a problem the creators of the Buy Beaver app are hoping to solve. The new app and partner website, isitfromcanada.ca, lets consumers scan a barcode to see where a product is made, with different scores for raw materials, manufacturing, and corporate ownership. Alexander Hamela and Christopher Dipp are behind the app. Jules Bugian spoke to Montreal-based co-founder Alexandre Hamela about what it means for a product to be made in Canada and how to get that knowledge to consumers.
2 weeks ago, we decided to build the Buy Beaver app with my co-founder Christopher Dipp. And here we are now. We have about 25,000 downloads on the iPhone app, as well as, I believe it's in the tens of thousands of visitors on our website, isitfromcanada.ca. And yeah, super grateful for all the support and excited for what's next.
So after the news of the Trump tariffs hit, a lot of people were calling for a boycott of American products, but you guys went further with this Buy Beaver app. Why was that your first response?
The idea came from my co-founder. He was having dinner with his family, and they were kind of troubled by the news. Me personally, I saw a lot of news being shared on social media and different lists of products to help Canadians buy more Canadian. Some of them were plain out wrong. We're sharing like false information. So we thought, as engineers, what would be the best way to unite a list of products with truthful scores. We thought the best way was to build a website, and that's what we did in a couple of days. We just launched.
Yeah, how does the app work?
We first started with a website because that was simpler to launch and it took less time. That was isitfromcanada.ca. And the app Buy Beaver works the same way as the website. So you just scan a product, the barcode of the product, then it will open up, if the product is in our database, it will open up a score for it and tell you if it's Canadian or not. And the score is divided into three parts. There's one for the manufacturing location. So if the product is manufactured in Canada or not, it's 1 out of 5. Also for the ingredients and materials, if they're sourced from Canada or not. And then for the brand ownership, if the brand and the company that owns the brand is American or Canadian, you'll have a score also for that. But the idea was also not to make this too political. We decided to just say, just tell the user if the product is Canadian. We don't tell the user if it's American or if it's European, or because we just want to help people buy more local. It's not about boycotting America, or we're for free trade. We don't agree with the tariffs being made, but we don't necessarily want to go into a political game here. So the idea was to make it crowdsourced so that we can, if we had a lot of users and people contributing, kind of like a Wikipedia, we could get like good scores and truthful information that way. From what we've seen, there's no official source of information for knowing where a company is headquartered, but also where the ingredients are sourced for any products in the supermarket. So the best way was crowdsourcing it and making kind of like a, like I said, a Wikipedia platform where people contribute by themselves. And we have 2 million products though, but only 30,000 are reviewed. So the rest have to be reviewed by someone. And also some products, when you scan them, they won't appear on our app. So you can just add that product and then review it if you want. So it's an active process. It just started 2 weeks ago. There's a lot of products which have not been reviewed or reviewed just a couple of times, but with time, with people contributing, giving out information they have on products, it hopefully will get more and more accurate.
Why do you think that ByBeaver has already seen such a big response from the public?
As I said, a lot of apps exist, so we're not the only ones. I think people have realized how important it is through these trade tariffs, etc., to support local businesses. That could be in your own province or in general, Canadian businesses. We rely a lot on America for the food we eat, the things we do. Seeing what has just happened and the announcements of Trump have kind of built a new movement where people are realizing how important it is to help people in their own community. So I think the app is just trying to amplify that, but the need is there and people are looking for solutions. I think the government should make it easier for people to buy in their communities. And I think that's like what we're trying to show with our app.
The ByBeaver app is free to download in the App Store. Amina says they have no plans to monetize it in the near future. For CKUT, I'm Jules Bouchel with the Local Journalism Initiative.
Not as popular yet, but also useful, another university student has launched a browser extension this time, hoping to make buying Canadian easier for online shoppers. Aidan Haldane thought there was something missing with the Buy Canadian movement online, so he took matters into his own hands by creating the supportcanadianextension.ca. The extension is something you can add to your online browser to help it find products and services that are Canadian instead of defaulting to Amazon or other big American companies. This double degree university student studying computer science at the University of Waterloo and business administration at the Wilfrid Laurier University in Ontario spoke with Cora Cool in Kitchener-Waterloo.
Aidan Haldane, a double degree university student studying computer science at the University of Waterloo and business administration at Wilfrid Laurier University, has put work into developing a browser extension to make it easier for Canadians to find Canadian retailers and products. Haldane says he realized there was something missing with the Buy Canadian movement online.
I was seeing a lot of disconnect online from people posting all of these massive lists about, hey, here's how you redirect. How do you find Canadian in a way which easily integrates into your online shopping experience? And that's kind of where I came up with the idea for Support Canadian, and it's kind of just grown from that.
Fueled with the hope of making buying Canadian easier, Haldane developed the extension very quickly.
It took a little under a week to develop the whole thing. It probably took about a day or two to build it, and then 3 or 4 days of I'm figuring out, hey, that doesn't work. Hey, how can we make this a little bit better before actually publishing it? And then it was a couple days for Chrome and Firefox to review the extension to make sure it was like doing what it's supposed to be doing and there's not anything malicious or there are no privacy concerns.
Haldane says the extension works two different ways, the first being a redirect to Canadian companies.
Let's say, for instance, you go to Nike.com. A lot of times when you're going through a customer journey process, you go to these American websites and you don't even realize it. So what this extension does is it gives you a subtle nudge saying, hey, just a reminder, Nike.com is not owned by a Canadian company. So why don't you check out some of these Canadian alternatives? And it shows you a list with their websites and their logos in the top right for some alternatives like Lululemon or Arc'teryx.
The second, a way to prioritize Canadian products.
So what it also does is if you want to remain with Amazon but still do a little bit of your part to help support Canadian, it prioritizes Canadian products to the top of whatever Amazon list you search up. So it goes into the product description for everything which returns from your Amazon search query and puts them at the top and puts a little Canadian badge on them to help you make a little bit of an impact.
The feedback on his extension, Haldane says, has been very positive.
Grown extremely rapidly. It has a little over 500 downloads, I think, on the Chrome Store alone, which is amazing, especially within the first week of its release. There's very few things you can hope for when you actually go out and try something and put something of your own out into the world to see how it actually goes. And it's awesome to see that it's even got engagement, and I'm just happy to see that it's being used and is something which people, at least some people, are finding helpful.
Haldane says he hopes this extension allows Canadians to notice the impact they can make, no matter how small.
I want to highlight the point that anything you can do to move the needle, any small purchase you can change, which is what this extension is all about, is how can you make this small change to make a little bit of your impact in a way which makes sense for you, hence like the Amazon features or the redirection features. So I would say never get too disappointed or feel guilty about not supporting Canadian enough, because really anything you do or any action you take is more than enough to help support.
To use this extension, you can visit supportcanadianextension.ca. There you can download the extension for the browser you use and learn more about Haldane. In Kitchener with the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Cora Cool.
Hello, I'm Candace Vetter in Embrun, Ontario, and you're tuned into Viewpoints.
And this is all happening in the midst of the February 28th No Shopping Economic Blackout campaign initiated in the United States by groups of consumers or activists to protest, quote, corporate greed and companies who have given in to President Donald Trump's effort to eliminate diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts in the country. Many Canadians will also participate in that boycott, which will extend to seven-day periods in March and target specific corporations such as Amazon and Walmart. But Canadian consumers have a different objective. In addition to a boycott of non-Canadian products, it's all about protesting the proposed American tariff threats and Trump's comments on Canada becoming the 51st American state. Municipal, provincial, and federal governments across the country are pitching in and taking action. For example, in Ontario, the Kingston Municipal Council recently voted in favor of a motion to develop a Shop Local campaign. This motion was brought forward by City Councillor Wendy Steffen, specifically in opposition to the proposed 25% tariffs on Canadian goods by the United States. Councillors unanimously supported the motion and discussed the broader context of U.S. trade policies and what can be done on the municipal level to confront this challenge. Christina Laurie in Kingston, Ontario.
Kingston City Council unanimously voted in favor of a motion to develop a Shop Local campaign. This motion is specifically in opposition to the proposed 25% tariffs on Canadian goods by the United States. Councillor Wendy Steffen brought forward the motion.
It's up to us to remind ourselves just how awesome it is to be a part of this community. And let's work together to keep our town vibrant. Let's rally around our local business owners and let's shop local.
Councillor Steffen emphasized the urgency of supporting local businesses, a sentiment shared by many councillors during the discussion. Council also dove into the broader context of these U.S. trade policies.
We've all heard the comments about Canada becoming the 51st state and how President Trump thinks that Canada is not viable as a country. And I think we need to be crystal clear here that Canada will never be the 51st state. This is what the U.S. is trying to do. They are trying to use tariffs to bully us into becoming the 51st state because we have things that they want. Only it's not lunch money, it's natural resources.
Councillor Brandon Tozo, who seconded the motion, echoed these sentiments.
This motion is very near and dear to my heart, and I really share the feelings of many Canadians of a profound betrayal by the Trump administration. as Councillor Stephen mentioned, we're being told that Canada is going to become the 51st state. That's not happening. Over my dead body.
Councillor Connie Glenn also pointed out that many businesses are just now bouncing back from the impact of the pandemic. And this added pressure only makes it more challenging.
So we've got businesses that are just getting into the stage of recovery after the pandemic. So to be hit by this, I think, is just another slap in the face. So anything that we can do to support them really matters.
The motion also has an element of advocacy to upper levels of government, calling for the removal of interprovincial trade barriers. Councillors Gregory Ridge and Vincent Shinani highlighted the practical importance of community support in this time.
If we're looking at the percentage of our workforce in Kingston who work in retail trade, it's approximately 12% of our workforce. If we're looking at people who work in accommodation and food services, it's approximately 10%. So you have 22% of our labor market that could be potentially affected just off the hop when we're talking about economic effects there, won't go into manufacturing or anything. And so I think a campaign to support local businesses right now is of the utmost importance. I think that it's not just something that we can do in a flag-waving, patriotic kind of way, but it's something that we need to do as a careful, focused economic strategy to help people in this time, because there will be changes. They may likely, in the immediate, be negative, and we need to be there to support each other.
When you support local businesses, they're the ones who, if they succeed, they're the ones who give back to the community. They're the ones who donate. They're the ones who sponsor sports teams. They're the ones who do a lot of like the community work because they care about the community. So the more we support them, the more they support the community. And regardless of tariffs and all that, this is just the thing that we should all be doing, regardless of what's going on in the world.
Mayor Brian Patterson provided the final comment of the night, noting that mayors south of the border have also been involved in discussions with neighboring Ontario municipalities.
It's just surreal that we're having to have this conversation, but I appreciate the motion. Certainly, I absolutely encourage everyone in our community to go out to support local, to shop local, to encourage visits to Kingston. The other thing I will say is that there are conversations that are happening among mayors, not only on this side of the border, but there are conversations that are happening with some of my colleagues south of the border as well. Because there are many border communities to the south of us that are being absolutely negatively impacted by what's going on right now. And we do have allies.
A copy of the motion will be sent to stakeholders, including Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and various business associations, urging them to take action.
While all of this is out of our control, we know that at least by supporting Kingston's local economy, that is supporting Canada's economy. And that is actually within our control. So, leaving here tonight, let's shop local, let's show our businesses some love, and let's get lots of tourists here to do exactly the same.
Kingstonians can expect to see an official Shop Local campaign launching soon. This has been Christina Laurie, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Oi, meu amor. Tá me ouvindo? Você tá dormindo? Tem uma coisa importante que eu queria te contar. Mas eu tô com medo que meu coração silencie meus lábios. Às vezes à noite, quando eu escuto a sua respiração, eu imagino que é o mar, que essa cama é um barco, e você é o oceano me carregando para bem longe.
Questions or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca. radio@frequencynews.ca.
Ashley Nunn-Smith, the CEO and Chief Librarian of the Nova Scotia South Shore Public Libraries, is also fighting her own kind of fight. The library she works at just launched a book sanctuary. It was launched on February 23rd at their main branch in Bridgewater to mark the Freedom to Read Week. The Book Sanctuary showcases a permanent collection of banned or challenged books from across North America. The Book Sanctuary is an idea that began at the Chicago Public Library in 2022. Almost 4,800 book sanctuaries now exist across the United States. Ashley Nunn-Smith has been joined by the staff of Nova Scotia's South Shore Public Libraries, who say they will fight for our rights right to read banned books. Here she is speaking with Rick Conrad in Liverpool, Nova Scotia.
So it is 50 titles that have been either banned or challenged, attempted to be banned in libraries and schools across North America, so the US and Canada. And they're really wide-ranging, cover a lot of different topics. And so what this is a permanent home for these titles. They're presently on display for about 3 weeks. And then after that, folks can borrow them and bring them home and read and think about the reason why someone might want you not to read that book. And so we're declaring ourselves a book sanctuary, a safe haven for books that somebody doesn't want you to read.
Christina Potty, who's the Communications and Engagement Lead for South Shore Public Libraries, organized it in about 3 weeks. She and Nunn Smith attended a recent library conference in Ontario, which highlighted the book sanctuary created by the Toronto Public Library in 2023. The idea began at the Chicago Public Library in 2022. Almost 4,800 book sanctuaries now exist across the U.S., according to booksanctuary.org. Nunn Smith says attempts to ban books are on the rise in North America.
It used to be, if you were a school, the parents of your own students might challenge some of the books, but now people are getting together and using like a keyword search on a library's catalog, and any book that has the word gay, people from not even your own area are submitting challenges. And so again, we're fortunate we haven't seen that happening here, but challenges are on the rise. And so we wanted to be proactive by establishing this collection now and saying that we will protect these items, will protect intellectual freedom through all of our services and collections, but this is a visual and symbolic representation of that value.
The Bridgewater Book Sanctuary includes typically banned books like 1984 or The Handmaid's Tale, but also children's books like Junie B. Jones and The Stupid Smelly Bus.
This one was challenged in Toronto, and so the reasoning was that Junie would be a bad role model for young folks, encourage them to be rude to adults, and encourage bad spelling. Every individual has a right to decide what to read. And when you're a parent, I'm a parent myself. And as a parent, I get to decide what my family reads, but I don't have the right to decide that for my neighbors.
The collection also includes the Bible, queer fiction, and Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s bestseller.
It's one point of view on public health and pharmaceuticals. And so whether or not you believe this point of view, it's still worthwhile to be able to read it, debate it, discuss it, read different points of view from your own. That's really vital to a democratic society.
The collection of 50 adult, teen, and children's books is on display at the Margaret Henniger Public Library in Bridgewater for 3 weeks. Beginning March 10th, people will be able to sign out specific items in the collection, either in person or on the library's website using the keywords SSPL Book Sanctuary. I'm Rick Conrad.
Hi, this is Erica Butler in Sackville, New Brunswick. You are tuned to Viewpoints.
And we close this 150th episode of Viewpoints in Toronto, where the St. Clair Multi-Faith Society has developed 177 new affordable housing units for the homeless and low-income renters. And under Phase 2 of the federal government's Rapid Housing Initiative, this charitable organization has just opened the doors to 26 new subsidized units in Toronto. Mia Johnson spoke to St. Clair's Executive Director, Andrea Adams, to hear more about the site and what residents are moving into.
Today the windows are in. I couldn't believe it. And I was jumping for joy and telling people, look at what's happening in this community.
Councillor Alejandro Bravo, among other city staff, stand before a three-story bright modern orange building Friday morning in the Davenport Ward. It's the opening for a supportive housing development, moving in people experiencing chronic homelessness in the city. There are 26 units available at 1120 Ossington Avenue. 10 of the 26 residents have already moved in. The remaining 16 units will be filled by next week. The project prioritizes residents on the city's main waiting list for shelter, which at last count had over 100,000 names. These are people waiting for permanent housing.
Yes, it addresses the list, and also through a method that makes sure that everybody has support equal to what their needs are to remain successfully housed, because what we want to make sure we do is to break the cycle of homelessness.
That's Andrea Adams. She's the executive director of St. Clair's Multi-Faith Housing Society. St. Clair's is a charitable organization and a self-described, quote, social justice landlord. They provide affordable, mixed-income housing in downtown Toronto, including the site opening today. Her organization will act as the landlord, while tenants will pay no more than 30% of their monthly income or of their shelter allowance of rent on social assistance. It's not emergency housing, but a more long-term solution.
All of our housing projects require contributions from all levels of government. And typically, the heavy lifter in that is the federal government. But the city makes very significant contributions as well.
The Ossington site is one of seven new affordable developments under Phase 2 of the Rapid Housing Initiative, a federal initiative to address the immediate housing needs of Toronto's most vulnerable populations, adding a total of 260 homes to the city's housing supply. This project also receives funding from the city. Councillor Alejandro Bravo says $800,000 from the community benefits charge was invested to help jumpstart this project. This bylaw collects on developments and redevelopments higher than at least five stories and with at least 10 residential units. That money can then be funneled into community housing projects like this one.
And that is what Davenport has prioritized, affordable housing, because this is the ultimate solution to homelessness. The goal has to be permanent housing.
So this is a studio apartment. Unlike many studio apartments, it has a storage closet in it.
14 years ago, the former Italian United Church on the site was added to and converted into 20 affordable apartments. Now, the new three-story building wraps around the existing one.
And it has very high ceilings, which help for people to have storage possibilities.
The modular building is made out of mass timber. Adam says the structure itself was put together in just 17 days.
Well, it's made out of mass timber, so basically it comes with components that lock into place. So when 17 days is said, that's the structure. Then there was more time required to do the finishing inside the building. But what's really important about that is that it lessens the impact on the neighborhood of the construction. So you don't have, 8 months worth of grisly construction happening.
Yeah.
And I think that really helps make the case for affordable housing.
Yeah, I actually
the supportive housing sites under construction now in the next phase of the Rapid Housing Initiative will have a similar design. Adam says she hopes to build on the success of previous expansions, like on Leonard Avenue and Kensington Market, an installation that took 6 days to build. It's been open now for 4 years with a total of 99 units. St. Clair's next project at Bellevue Avenue, city staff say, will be completed by the end of the year, adding 78 more homes.
Thanks to Mia Johnson in Toronto. And this is how we close our show this week. Thanks to our many journalists, Jules Bugiel, Christina Laurie, Cora Kuhl, Rick Conrad, and Mia Johnson. Thanks to our national editors, Victoria Fenner and Conrad Fox. Viewpoints is brought to you by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative. I'm Boris Chassagne, your host and producer. Thanks to you for keeping us company this week. And until the next, ciao.